your fault. Maybe it's not mine. Our chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, and no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest my cab in the middle of it. Rest my cab in the middle. We are. Rest my cab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness, we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. I've got Tony Gosling with me tonight. Welcome, Tony Gosling from Bristol, England.
Hi, George. Lovely to speak to you again.
Boy, I tell you what, you're always you're a ball of fire. You know that, Tony? You always have a lot to say. And how are you doing over there in Bristol, England? Okay?
Well, I'm doing fine, but I can't say the same for my radio station, which is BCFM on 93.2. For any of your listeners on FM coming through Bristol on a Friday evening, they'll hear us. But they won't have heard us over the last 2 weeks because we had a devastating fire, electrical fire, in our main studio, Studio One. This is literally the day before the Jeffrey Epstein business, when he was found dead. And I don't think there's anything to really link them, but it was very, you know, inconvenient for us not being able to do that program. Which we were due to do that evening. We were going to be looking at him, and it was literally the next morning after our program was due to go out, which was again the day after the studio fire, that he was found dead. So, you know, a bit of a pity. But we've moved to an old kind of shack on the other side of town in a much, shall we say, kind of skid row area of Bristol. I think that's the best way to describe it, over in Texas. You'd understand that sort of thing. It's where there's a lot of kind of artwork, graffiti, bars, and you'll find a lot of people there late into the night at that end of town. Very populated. It's called Stokes Croft. Bristol's last riot about 8 years ago took place there, where there was an attempt to stop a demonstration against Tesco's supermarket, which the locals had said very much they didn't want being opened there, and it's known as now as the Tesco riots in Bristol. And so we were down there. We've been down there for the last two shows, George, because our studio is just a hulk of burnt out plastic and metal, and it's been being cleaned out. A lot of the volunteers from the radio station have been down there helping clear it out, and we're hoping to be back today. Literally today is our first day back on there since then.
Oh, and they're going to have new equipment in there for you and everything?
Broadcasting from our number two studio in the same place, the Eastern Community Center. Sorry, I didn't catch that last question, sorry.
Oh, is one studio burned pretty badly, Studio One?
We have our number two studio. It's just used for pre-recording shows. It's much smaller. It's got much less kit in there, very basic. And so we're going to be broadcasting from there, we hope, next Friday live.
Oh, that's great, Tony. That's great. What's happening over there?
Over £6,000 is worth saying. A crowdfunder was put out pretty quickly, and we've got enough money straight away pretty much to buy the kit, because that's the most important bit for us. We've got lots of volunteers who are prepared to give their time, but we obviously need the money to buy speakers, mixers, microphones, everything that needs replacing. So we're basically putting together a new studio at the moment.
Oh, that's great. What's happening over there? What are you thinking about this Epstein suicide? What's the talk over there? What's your opinion of what's going on?
I mean, there's been a lot of interest in Epstein, actually, in the UK, because of his links to Robert Maxwell, to Ghislaine Maxwell, who's Robert Maxwell's daughter, and his kind of, I wouldn't say partner in crime, really. So, obviously lots of connections to Britain, a very strong connection to Prince Andrew as well, who's basically an arms dealer. He goes around cutting arms deals for the British arms industry, spends a lot of time in places like Saudi Arabia, places like that. And so the whole idea of him being linked to child sex trafficking was pretty, explosive. So there's been quite a lot of interest. Also, I've noticed, questions about the suicide. Now, was it suicide? Because it's quite clear that Epstein was saying 2 weeks before he died that someone was trying to kill him. So this sounds to me like a bit of a pre-warning of something fishy going on. And it's even possible, I mean, this is a real outside chance, but it's even possible that the guy is still alive somewhere and that some kind of, body double or somebody else was in the body bag, although I think that's really unlikely. Given that, the whole circumstances around this definitely don't point to suicide. They point to him being murdered to get him out of the way, basically with the line that dead men tell no tales, George.
Right. He knew too many top people on this side of the Atlantic and on that side. He just was, just too well connected, and it would have exploded. It would have ruined a lot of people's lives.
The thing is, he was connected to the top of the top. So we're talking
cream de la cream. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're not talking even about people like Donald Trump, who is not the guy in charge. We're talking about the people who are the financiers. Often behind the scenes, who are running things like hostile takeover bids for enormous multinationals that are bigger than countries. These people stay in the shadows, and Epstein was very close to a lot of them. In fact, there's one name that keeps popping up again and again, which is Leslie Wexner, who was a billionaire who was much richer than Epstein, and he kind of turned Epstein into a so-called financier. But one of the things we've heard is that although he was talked about as a sort of financial whiz kid guy, he was never seen on Wall Street. People never saw him there. He was up to other things. That money was appearing in his bank accounts and in his investment firms from I would suggest some sort of black operations, maybe even sort of slush funds for drug money, that sort of thing. So, I mean, that was basically a front that he was a financier.
Steve, but
that was just a front operation explanation as to how he was so wealthy.
It was a front. Front. Yeah.
I think so. Certainly, yeah. If we could start by looking at some of the UK connections, obviously Ghislaine Maxwell's the most. The obvious thing to say about her. It's all of this investigation, indictments, arrests, charges should shift to her, because she is absolutely as implicated as he was in this child sex trafficking. In fact, it certainly looks as if she was the main procurer of young kids for him and for the effectively intelligence operation they were running, which was. This is why I say it's a front, I think, the financial stuff, is they were running a blackmail operation. I think that's pretty clear now. People like Philip Giraldi, former CIA guy, and Whitney Webb on Mint Press News have really pulled all this apart. They had, for example, the places in New York City and Florida, George, were had cameras and microphones all over the place.
Right.
Well, worth mentioning as well that Leslie Wexner's places... His homes had CCTV hidden everywhere. One of his bathrooms, apparently, was like something from James Bond.
Right.
And if you opened one of the cupboards in one of the bathrooms, you'd see a whole bunch of, array of CCTV everywhere. I mean, obviously, that's not the sort of thing you want to see in the bathroom or the restroom when you're using it. You don't want to see CCTV everywhere.
No, they're right. Yeah, I don't like to, my bathroom habits being broadcast.
Well, it shows you where these people are coming from. They're interested in very much intruding into people that come and visit them's private lives. Yeah. And also, of course, that is potentially usable for blackmail. That's, I think, what really this is all about. This is not about powerful elite people have got some sort of predilection for this. The idea is to entrap them with young girls, film them, take pictures, that sort of thing, in order to sort of threaten them and get them to, you know, say there's some reluctance to, you know, get involved in the next war or whatever. You say, well, okay, if you're going to say no to this, then, you know, you're going to get the Daily Mail, the New York Post, this is going to be on the front page tomorrow. Because they'll love these pictures we've got of you.
Well, that Jessamine was on the New York Post. She was seen at a In-N-Out hamburger place in L.A. the other day.
So why is she free, George? Why hasn't she been charged?
Well, she's the unnamed person in the indictment or something. She's not named in the indictment by name.
Well, why not? Because she's clearly been involved. There is an absolute mountain of evidence now of witness statements saying that she has been child sex trafficking. And there's enormous amounts. I mean, even trying to get these girls to have children for her and offering to pay $200,000 a month for them to look after those children once they've had them. I mean, this is all with minors, which is what she was procuring from around the world. This is all criminal. So why is she going to burger joints? Why has she been arrested? And all of those people who, many of those people who've made statements against Jeffrey Epstein that got him convicted previously and this time again charged, also cite her. So why is she walking the streets, George? This is unbelievable. Her father, by the way, Robert Maxwell, who was a London Daily Mirror magnate, he was a newspaper guy in London, very powerful. His funeral was a Mossad funeral, and they had some of the Mossad chiefs there, and he was thanked for his services to the Israeli state by, you know, these intelligence chiefs at his funeral, Robert Maxwell. But that's what Ghislaine was doing, and that is simply procuring young girls for entrapment. Pretty obvious, really. The list of names, just sticking with the UK, is Prince Charles number one on the list. Like I say, an arms dealer, him being involved in child sex trafficking is explosive. It's not very nice for the Queen. And the Queen, of course, was one of the people whose private numbers were on Epstein's phone. So the Queen is giving her private numbers to child sex traffickers. What's that all about?
It's
also worth mentioning that, I mean, the Queen has got a lot of questions to answer. She might like to turn up at Ghislaine Maxwell's trial when it happens, yeah, because she may have a few things to say. Her other son, Prince Charles, Edward apparently is not so bad, but one of her other sons, Prince Charles, he's been linked, of course, very close to Jimmy Savile, the paedophile, the worst paedophile in British history. So we've got two of Queen Elizabeth's sons linked to underage sex, perversion, and all this sort of thing. So I think the Queen has got a few questions to answer about the way she's brought these two boys up.
Right, exactly. That's why Jeslin may be in danger right now out there in L.A. Because
who?
She knows too much. Jeslin Maxwell may be in danger now.
If she's got any sense, she'll be going to the press, she'll be going to the police and telling them everything she knows. Now, her best chance, as in many cases like this, when one finds oneself very close to a big story like this, is to turn what we call in the UK Queen's evidence, which is to say, right, okay, this has been exposed. I will help you, the state, the people, the government. I will help you to net all the big fish here and in exchange for immunity from prosecution. And that's, of course, what they should be doing with her, is to be saying to building a relationship with Ghislaine. I mean, this is very much like what the British intelligence used to do in the Second World War, is they'd be friendly to the Germans they captured, and they say, well, we're going to win the war, but actually we're going to make it Europe a lot better than the Hitler would have done, and so kind of let's just be friends. And this worked with many, many of the Nazis that were captured in the Second World War, George, is they just basically crumbled, their whole Nazi facade disappeared, and they said, yeah, okay, you're absolutely right. And they did. They cooperated. They told the British intelligence up in Bedford everything. about what they needed to know. And as a result, many of them did walk free after the war, even though they committed crimes, because what they'd done is they'd helped the authorities to net the real big fish. And that's what this should, you know, really be about, is, you know, the implication of people like Lesney Wexner. Potentially people should be concerned about his involvement with Epstein and start asking questions. Why did Lesney Wexner lend or give vast sums of money to Epstein and not to other people? I mean, Wexner, for example, Wexner is behind the Victoria's Secret chain, right, which is this sex clothes, you know, sort of lingerie chain throughout the world. This is the sort of thing which, you know, may be used to give these, you know, these lingerie gifts to the girls. The whole thing, I think, is tied up with the whole idea of sexual entrapment. This is this billionaire with CCTV.
Well, now Steve Pachinik says that it was a Mossad honeypot operation.
That's right. Well, many people are saying, well, I think that's exactly right.
Yeah. Another thing, too, is Prince Andrew was cut loose from the Florida indictment down there the first time around with Epstein. He was expunged from that whole process down there.
The most damning side of all of this is the royal connection.
Exactly. Exactly.
Because the British royal family, though they kind of lurk behind the scenes, the Queen has got this very, very good public relations image in Britain,
right,
as being the, you know, she doesn't say anything in public, except she does a few things which are always the right things. So she keeps a lot secret, and she's very, very good at it. The only trouble is, you can't control your boys. When your boys are associating with child sex traffickers and the biggest paedophile Britain has ever seen, that does rather cast aspersions on, you know, your secrecy and why you're being so secret. Maybe there's other stuff going on. So those are the main connections in Britain, as far as I can see, is through Ghislaine, Robert Maxwell, and Prince Andrew. But also, you know, this is really, I think, exposing some of the dark secrets of the British royal family. This is, if you actually, okay, the secrecy is accepted by many, but let's also look at, you know, for example, strange deaths that have taken place around Prince Charles, too, on his estate, Highgrove in Gloucestershire, just near Bristol, actually. And, you know, there are all sorts of, you know, there's also the nurse who she, this is to the Prince William, his wife, and this nurse committed suicide as well in a very peculiar way. Yeah. Suddenly she made the criticism and she died. So it's rather too much so-called suicide spiraling around the royal family.
Yeah.
The other thing is with the hanging. The hanging is, you know, well known as a Masonic sign, right? So
right,
the Freemasons
right,
always, it's used in witchcraft too, and this is a way of saying that this death is by us. So for those insiders, they will know, they will see this as a chilling reminder of what could happen to them if they say anything outside the craft, whether that craft be Freemasonry or witchcraft, George.
Right. You know, Ole Domegaard on some of these false flag operations. Well, we've got this one in El Paso. Have you been looking into that? And then the Dayton, Ohio shooting. And I think both of the shooters were on some kind of psychotropic, psychiatric drugs. It seems to be just given,
yeah,
you know?
Hey, it's really, a lot of the people, and I think Donald Trump is 100% right to nail it as a connection to mental illness.
Right.
Because
right,
actually, the mentally ill are very easy to manipulate. We all know about the Manchurian candidate.
Yes, yes.
But you can use things like hypnosis, basically destabilize people. You can even, I mean, this is something that's sort of plaything tool of the CIA and MI6, the intelligence services, like to play with people's minds. They like to get inside people's heads and almost implant ideas into them, get them to be easily manipulated from afar. And if you're in an unstable condition, you're very open to suggestion. And it could be that that's been involved here. Even if it isn't, though, I think we've got to take a much more robust attitude to mental health. What happens is, so often in Britain and in America, we leave people with nothing, particularly young people. We don't give them opportunities. We don't give them prospects for the develop themselves, to get careers, families, and an income for the future. We're not doing that in the way we should do. Everybody should have a decent chance of a decent future, and we're not doing that. Of course, that is perfect for those that want to exploit people with mental health difficulties, that is to say the intelligence agencies and anybody else, criminal elements, organized crime, and that, I think, is very much the case in many of these mass shootings, is people are very unstable. And those unstable people need to be cared for, whether that's by the state, by the church, but certainly they shouldn't be alienated and they should be taken seriously. And often they are casualties of injustice in the justice system too. As we've seen with several of these people, that you'll find that something's happened in their life which has been a disaster they haven't been able to come to terms with, largely because the justice system isn't doing its job. I mean, it's too easy to buy the court process, buy the system, and that just destabilizes people, George. At the end of the day, they're trying to, obviously, disarm the American public. They're trying to make sure that people don't have the ability to fight back if their government turns on them.
Yeah, it's about gun control, and they're pushing it towards the red flag types of laws here, where a neighbor or a family member could turn you in and have your guns taken from you. And that's where we're headed.
This is the idea, of course, is to turn neighbours against each other. That's the whole point of this sort of law. Rather than people being organised to fight their government.
Right.
You have to also remember, there is a massive long-term programme to discredit democratic governments. So right. The real government
exactly.
In the West...
Exactly.
Real government in the Western world
right.
Is the corporations, the banks, the media, the mass media, not little media like you and I, the mass media, who you never hear this kind of discussion on there,
no.
On the BBC, CNN, that discredit them, and the universities. There's also a tremendous amount of control of what is allowed to be taught in universities. They don't really like critical thinking anymore. The idea is to try and get people to believe a certain views of history and that sort of thing. And so there are several of these institutions which are very, very controlled, George, and they are easily bought. This is the thing, easily bought via the banks. So the banks provide the buying power. The arms industry provides the fighting power abroad to acquire more land, to expand the empire. And those people really in charge, I think, are those, I mean, I'm not saying Leslie Wexner is, you know, the main man, of course, but there are a lot of people who are very powerful behind the scenes, very rich and wealthy, and they believe that wealth entitles them to buy up the planet, to buy up the press, to buy up democratic governments, and to overturn them.
Right, exactly. Boy, I tell you, you're right on. The money itself, starting in the temples, you know what I mean? It really, really made, inroads, you know what I mean, into controlling the whole society, see?
Well, yeah, the other thing is, of course, you've got to remember that the credit system that we're going towards, you know, the electronic money system is
right.
Actually pretty similar to the whole old ancient Egyptian system, which was a credit system. You never actually, any individual in ancient Egypt didn't have anything of value, of worth themselves. But the system told them what they were worth. And, of course, the system can just decide, you're not worth nothing today because we don't like you, if it wants to. You should be able to actually possess some wealth yourself. When the old gold standard, with the dollar on the gold standard up until the 1970s, that was a perfectly good system. Nixon kicked it off, and I was listening to a terrific talk by Michael Hudson. We had it on our show yesterday in Bristol. The former banker is a terrific. I don't know if you've come across Michael, but what he's saying is that since Nixon took the dollar off the gold standard in 1971, they've been really living on borrowed time, by getting the petro, you know, the petrodollar has been kind of keeping the dollar going ever since then.
Right.
But what's now happening with Trump's trade war with China is the Chinese and the Russians particularly are not buying anywhere near as many U.S. Treasury bonds as they used to, and instead, you know what they're doing? They're buying gold.
Yeah,
and
right.
And that's bringing their own currencies, effectively, are starting to become the ruble and the yuan are starting to become the new gold standard that's taking over from the dollar. So the only thing that's keeping the dollar going, really, is Saudi Arabia and the whole petrodollar system. So that's, I think, an interesting kind of underside to Trump's China trade war. I mean, he did get elected to do it, and I try and always remind people this. He, when he stood for election, he said, we are going to put up tariffs to Chinese steel.
Right.
And many people would argue he's right to do that, but you've got to make sure you've got an industry in the United States, you've got enough industry so you can manufacture steel, make cars, make aeroplanes, make whatever it is you want to make, you know, whether it's washing machines, whether it's trains, anything. But if you've got, you haven't got the industry there in the first place, that's, you're going to be basically, by putting up all these tariffs, you're going to be cutting off your nose to spite your face, George.
Yeah, one of the indicators that just popped up last week was the long-term bond rate dipped below the short-term rate. And that's an indication of a looming recession in the future.
Well, that's definitely the case.
One other thing I wanted to make, too, on this false flag thing, I just found the man's name. It's a name that it's not a very frequent or common name, Dr. Louis Joyon Jolly West. Do you know that name?
Never heard of it, never.
Anyway, look that up. He has interviewed almost every person that's been in these assassinations or mass murder or the bombing in Oklahoma. He's interviewed almost every one of those people. Sirhan Sirhan, Jack Ruby, McVeigh, all those people. He went gone in to their prison or their jail and interviewed them. This man right here. Now he passed away about several years ago. He was tied into the MK Ultra and all this mind control stuff. Very
deeply. Yeah, but events could be overtaking all this, George. This is the trouble. Is things starting to kick off in Hong Kong, aren't they? I mean, you know, we could see Chinese troops going into Hong Kong. If so, we could be looking at a third world war. Ultimately, you know, what are the Chinese troops going to do to those Hong Kong people?
The Chinese, they better be careful because it's an outlet to the West, and they're messing around with something that they should leave alone.
The thing is that the China is in a position where it's made its money from the global financial system. It may be thinking, well, we've had enough of all this international trade. We've got enough industry to fight our own fauna, and we don't need to trade with the United States. We're just going to stop selling them stuff, and we don't need to trade with Europe. You know, we can even, you know, have a battle with them, and that could easily turn into some sort of fighting war as well. So this is the danger of these economic wars, is they can turn real. But let's just get back to Jeffrey Epstein for a minute, because there are a few other people to mention. Bill Clinton, obviously, mention him.
Yeah.
Clinton, very, very much involved. Clinton refused Secret Service escorts.
Yeah.
So this is amazing, really. He took Jeffrey Epstein's massage people instead of the Secret Service escorts on some of his international trips. So what the hell's going on there? I mean, it really looks as if these people that are being recruited by Ghislaine Maxwell and by Jeffrey Epstein are basically international spies or Mossad spies. Maybe it's the Israelis, maybe it's others, but it certainly looks like they're Israeli spies that are literally taking the place of Secret Service, U.S. Secret Service personnel on international trips with Bill Clinton. Absolutely amazing, really. And I suppose there's also people like some of the other people involved. Netanyahu is very close to Epstein. Ehud Barak, Israeli Prime Minister, was also very close to him. He was also close to the ADL and Benign Brith, of course. And that is, you know, the these Zionist lobby organizations in the United States, and they've been going for many years, but they are still at the cutting edge, and they fund a lot of the agitation in the US and in the UK pro-Israel. So they try and make out that anyone that criticizes Israel is anti-Semitic, and they're doing it because they hate Jews. But that's just nonsense. You know, we can see we can criticize Israeli policy. But finally, George, on Epstein, is the brilliant New York Times article about him, which talks about his links to transhumanism.
That was going to be done at his New Mexico ranch or something.
That's right. I mean, the thing is, a lot of people don't understand what trans is. Basically, like a religion for the super elite. You know, if you can imagine what Peter Thiel, Eric Schmidt, and the Bilderbergers are into, this is the stuff. Basically, they believe that you can use artificial intelligence to alter the human DNA, and that their kids are going to live forever if they have it done. So they'll be playing millions, if not billions, of their spare dollars into these research grants, which actually I don't think they're ever going to get anywhere. But this is the trouble with these people. They don't make a big fuss about it, but, you know, they don't believe in God necessarily, or anybody else, or anything else, but they do believe in something. And this is one of the things I think is fascinating about getting into the mind of these elitist psychos. I mean, you could say some of them are psychos, some of them probably aren't. But the things they believe, George, are really pernicious, actually, because what they're doing is they're saying, well, you know, we can alter our DNA to turn ourselves.
Yeah.
We won't just be a financial elite. We will be an elite species. And we're starting to talk then, aren't we, about a master race.
Yeah, well, eugenics originated the movement here in this country, New York. And then it moved into Nazi Germany. And stuff. So that's one of their underlying big movements in the world. You know, it's a purification of the race and all that other stuff is what they've been preaching. And the African thing is a target. They want to eliminate the blacks in Africa. That's what they're about right now.
Well, I can remember, is it Horowitz's book about AIDS and Ebola being man-made?
Exactly. They imported that stuff into Africa to reduce the African population. That's what I found out.
Yeah, so fascinating.
That's part of the big plan, see.
One bit of good news, though, this week is we had the BBC World Service doing a fascinating report on Iran where they pointed out that the US, I think it's Brian, gosh, I can't remember his second name. Anyway, he's Pompeo's advisor on Iran. And he was saying that, there's a lot of disinformation. We are not stopping medical supplies, blah, blah, to Iran. We're not stopping any aid for, humanitarian aid, that kind of thing. And the BBC blew it out of the water, George. Absolutely rubbish. They rubbished it. They're saying, look, this is complete nonsense. And they had an interview with the Norwegian Refugee Council who said, well, we can't get any money to Iran, which effectively means we can't work there. We can't. The people that I've been employing there are having to leave. So they are sanctioning that sort of thing. The other thing is, of course, they're not being able to get medical supplies in because none of the banks, and this is the banksters at work again, will deal with Iran. European banks won't because they're afraid, apparently, of being sanctioned. But actually, of course, they are politically opposed to Iran because the Iranians have a moral banking system. And the ideology of the Western banking system is utterly opposed to them. You know, for example, you know, they have much more open banking. They don't allow interest to be charged and that sort of thing in Iran. This is the old-fashioned way, the way we used to do it here, actually, under the Christian usury laws. But the banking fraternity is absolutely opposed to the Iranian banking system. And I think that is potentially what is really behind this hatred of Iran. Michael Hudson and others have pointed out, hang on a minute, you know, the United States has pledged, if you don't repay our loans, if you don't behave in the financial manner that we want, then we'll bomb you. And this is exactly the same as the old British Empire used to do back hundreds of years ago, is it would entrap people, get them to take out big loans with British banks, and then if those loans weren't paid back, wherever it might be, the Royal Navy would turn up with a few of their frigates on your doorstep and start shelling you from the sea and blowing up your ports so that you couldn't trade anymore until you paid the debt off. So it's a very similar thing the US is trying to do with Iran right now in a more virtual way through the banking system.
Right. Well, that tanker there in Gibraltar has been released. Is that right?
Well, the question that nobody's
Gloria
really
One,
asked.
I think it's called Gloria One. Is the name of the tanker.
Grace, it's called Grace One.
Oh, Grace One. That's right. Grace One.
It's been released. It's been released. Look, George, the guy that had it seized in the first place was in the running to be British Prime Minister Jeremy Hunt, whose father's an admiral, whose cousin, is it, or his wife or someone very closely related to him, is the head of one of the big private medical firms, and he was in charge, Jeremy Hunt, of the National Health Service and our health system in Britain. So he was basically privatising it to his own family, and a brilliant health system we've got, by the way. I have to say, you know, so many people I know, it's basically like one big family, yeah? So everybody in that family loves each other and looks after each other and gives each other the very best possible care they can. And it works extremely well, but people like Hunt are trying to sell it all off to mostly US private healthcare firms and make it so that the poor simply don't get health treatment. At the moment, you know, actually there's very good treatment for everyone. But look, getting back to the tanker, it's quite interesting because I think Jeremy Hunt did this during the leadership campaign to leave, I mean, Boris was the front runner all along, but to leave Boris a poison chalice, yeah? So this is him saying, I, Jeremy Hunt, will do anything the Pentagon wants me to do. And that's my, unique selling point. And so, of course, there's going to be a lot of people around the world see that, particularly in Israel and the US, and say, right, well, this is the guy for us, you know. Let's fund him. Let's hope he becomes more powerful in the future. And it's great to see that Boris has taken the bull by the horns, probably some advice from the Foreign Office, and released it. So he's overturned that decision, and effectively it showed the dividing line between Jeremy Hunt and Boris Johnson in practical terms as the two people who were running to be Tory leaders, one of whom is going to act in the interests of Britain and Gibraltar, hopefully, and the other one who is going to basically be a puppet, Jeremy Hunt, of the United States. So I'm glad to see that Boris has arranged for this tanker to be released.
Yeah, how about Brexit? Can Boris do it in 60 days? That's quite a promise, isn't it?
Well, it's Halloween, George, isn't it? Look,
dead back to life.
Yeah. I mean, what is going to happen? I can tell you, many people I've spoken to, independent observers, see this as the biggest problem that the international transatlantic elite have had to face, the Bilderbergers, if you want.
Right.
The Executive Committee of Global Capitalism, can we call them that? You know, these guys, the biggest thing they've ever had to face, it's the biggest kick up the backside, punch in the face, and so quite clearly they're going to be reacting badly to it. You know, they want to see a united Europe. They have done ever since World War II, probably before that, with the Kalergi plan back in the 1920s. And they want to control Europe on a kind of cartel system in an even more draconian way than I think they've done in the United States. So this is all about centralizing power, centralizing control, and shutting ordinary people out of any kind of democratic decision-making whatsoever. And so to see Britain start sailing off into the Atlantic, the big downside is we keep hearing American voices on the BBC all the time for the last few months, which is really irritating, because it's, you know, even here in Britain, people as correspondents, why are Americans sitting in the BBC chairs? And, of course, the public aren't impressed by that. But I think we may well see it actually happen. And then after that, we may also see, some kind of conflagration on the international financial markets. We've already seen, as you mentioned, some warning of that, you know, birth pangs of something horrendous happening on the international financial markets. But don't forget, you know, we're looking at £166 trillion debt overhang, according to Mervyn King. Look that up on thisismoney.co.uk, which is part of the Daily Mail empire. That Mervyn King has made absolutely clear that we are waiting for another enormous crash. It can happen any time. 166
trillion. The debt is a big problem, isn't it? Yeah.
Is massive. $166 trillion. Yeah. You know, unbelievable amount of money, and that is unpayable. So at some point it's all going to go bang, says Mervyn King. Now that can happen any time, and it does seem to me as if it could happen sooner rather than later. It may prevent Brexit if it happens beforehand, but another thing that could prevent Brexit, of course, is any kind of conflagration, a war of some sort as well. So these people will be looking, I think, at anything, and they don't care about how many people die as a result of it, so long as they hang on to their power, their control of the 800-900 million people in Europe through Brussels and the EU, George.
Right. You know, yeah, that Brussels and that European Union, that's far from being democratic, isn't it? Huh?
Well, of course it's not. No, it's not at all. I mean, we've just seen a whole load of people put in charge of the European Commission, which runs
exactly.
Criminals.
Yeah.
I mean, Lagarde is a criminal. She's now in charge of the European Central Bank. So we're basically being run in Europe by organised crime. You know, these are the people in charge. And there's no real accountability at all for these people, and they just tell us what to do, simple as that. So it is a fascist system, I think, an appointed system of people who are just simply going to run Europe in the interests of big corporations, and of course that is effectively a kind of law of the jungle, where the poor, anyone that's got their own ideas, that's outside of the control system of the monopolies, and the oligopolies that control all the industries in a cartel system, anybody outside that is not going to get a look in at all. So even if you're a genius, say, car maker or something like that, you've got some great ideas, your ideas are never going to be realized for yourself. They might be stolen and taken by another massive cartel firm, but there's no free market at all in that world, George.
Yeah, in fact, our patent office can take a patent up if it has national security implications and give you just a pittance, see? So that's the way that works, you know. But yeah, it's a money-based system, and it's a monopoly of money creation that dominates, and that's what kind of system they built, huh?
What we're looking at, really, I think, is the difference between corporate or elected governments. And the corporate government has been taking over for the last 30 or 40 years. In a similar way, the philosophy behind it all is a social Darwinist philosophy versus a Christian philosophy. And the social Darwinists are winning, you know, which is basically the idea that the strong crush the weak with the boot, and the tough survive, and they are the ones who are going to be in charge. And that is just, there's no morals to that whatsoever, Jules. That's the problem. Anyway, my show is on every Friday.
Okay.
In British summertime, we're on at the moment. That's from 6 till 8 p.m. We had the Lord Mayor of Bristol on yesterday. And we had a whole program all about financial fraud, financial scams. And fantastic guest, I have to say that, don't I? His name is Rowan Bosworth Davis. He's a former Metropolitan Police Fraud Squad officer, and he took us through all of the scams that are involved in the way that crime is investigated now, being outsourced to private businesses that have got no interest in solving the crime. In fact, they've got more interest in helping the criminals. Anyway, it's fascinating to hear from him. And if you want to pick that up online, obviously, you know, in Austin, it's not so easy to pick up FM from Bristol in the UK, unless you've got some weird atmospherics, then you'd have to pick us up on thisweek.org.uk, George.
Yeah, I'll make a hypertext link up like I always do there, Tony, and they'll be able to come in and listen to your show.
A program during the week which is may be of interest to some of your listeners, which is I've been looking over the last few weeks at things like engineering and manufacturing, and speaking to some people who were working in aerospace engineering in Bristol in Filton during the 1960s and 70s, and also had a terrific interview on our dialect show at dialectradio.co.uk with Anton Chaikin, who was taking us through some of the reasons why Britain and America have been so deindustrialized over the last 30 or 40 years. So we do a kind of that as well. My most recent program on the dialects during the week was all about the Freemasons.
Okay.
And it's a documentary into the spiritual aspects of the Freemasons, the practical aspects, giving a fair hearing to both sides, so critical of Freemasonry and the Freemasons themselves, And also, one of the most fascinating people is a guy called Ian Matteson on there, who's a former senior Freemason himself, who came out of Freemasonry, and is much more able, I think, to speak about what is the Freemasonry really all about. You know, what goes on in there, what are the myths, and what are not the myths. And he's a former major in the British Army, now retired, and he's, you know, fascinating guy to hear him taking us through. Doing basically a review of the Freemasons talking about themselves, and then he explains what he really thinks about it. So you're getting a really terrific insight on both of these programs, I hope, George, and that's what I do try and do. You know, the BBC do it occasionally. We do it every single week.
Okay, well, thank you, Tony, for being with us this evening. We certainly appreciate all your insights and your excellent news and insights and opinions, okay?
Okay, George, God bless to you and yours and all your listeners.
Bless you too. Good night. Just want to round out this third hour tonight with some closing comments and so forth. I brought up a man's name, Jolly West, and he's a very interesting person, and it's something to look up on your Wikipedia and your other sources. I think there's Wikisource and other, you know, sources in there. But the man was an expert psychologist and hypnotist out of the UCLA Medical, one of those departments out there over the years. And he virtually showed up and interviewed every major individual that was either indicted or involved with an assassination, Jack Ruby, Sirhan, McVeigh, and other people like that over the years. And so he was also connected with MK Ultra in the 60s. We know that for sure. So this gentleman has passed away now, but he's someone to look into and look up on some of the history that's behind him, because he's a very, very interesting individual, see. And so as a result, then, it's something to take note of, okay? And what has been happening in this country could be called possibly an American Gladio operation. And when we say American Gladio, that was one of the terms that I've coined recently, is Professor Ganser out of Switzerland pioneered with a book about the secret, you could say, armies, NATO armies in Europe. And what basically happened over there was that there was a stay-behind type of operation after the Soviets took over Eastern Europe. And in the Western countries, instead of them being a stay-behind, they turned into terrorist units. And they started operations, bombings, assassinations, and so on. And this book about the secret NATO secret armies by Ganser is something to look into and read, because it gives us a side of Europe that we have very, very seldom seen, but it's not a very good side of it. But anyway, I think if you go into the internet and you go in and put in American Gladio, GLADIO.com, I think you'll come up with some interesting click-offs there on that site. The shooting that occurred in El Paso, we have people that were interviewed shortly after, a series of people. I think there's up to five people that Mike Hansen has on his site that say there was multiple shooters. One woman said there were four shooters that came in the front doors that were heavily armed black, you know, outerwear, I mean, uniforms and so forth, that started shooting. And it is typical in these types of operations or these types of tragedies, and it's tragic when someone that you love has been murdered by some crazy, wild-eyed shooter. We have the shooter coming in the front door without a T-shirt on underneath his shirt, but we have him being arrested, so supposedly out there on the sidewalk or whatever, with a T-shirt on underneath his shirt. So it's, and he doesn't really look like the same person, maybe. I mean, this is getting into the conspiratorial part of this. and then the Dayton shooter, and I think the El Paso shooter, both were under treatment and were given some kind of psychotropic drugs. We call them psychiatric drugs from a psychiatrist's viewpoint. But in many cases, or in some cases, I should say, not many, but sometimes these drugs can be a contributing factor to some of these people going crazy and doing these shootings. Sometimes these drugs will affect people in certain ways where it induces psychotic fits, okay, psychotic episodes. And so it just happened to be that these crazy people are out there. If they're on psychiatric drugs, then they can be influenced, and they certainly can be hypnotized and so forth. But they can be riled up. They can be, you know, influenced in very, very evil ways sometimes. This is what we see possibly going on in this country today, is that some of these shootings may be operations of some kind of a very, very deep, deep state. And if that is the case, then we're really in big trouble here in this country. We know that here, after the El Paso and the Dayton shootings, we've had a rash of proposals coming in from gun-controlled-oriented people. And those people want to control and take away these types of weapons, okay? These combat types of weapons, they're called it. But they're doing it this time and there's a couple of different tracks here that I see. I think President Trump has been entertaining something that's more tougher, test to get weapons, to buy weapons. Okay, a background check, but one that's in greater depth. And so the other thing that's going on are red flag, you know, laws. I think some of the states already have these. And the way that those red flag laws would operate is that they go in and allow neighbors, relatives, family members to go to court and file a statement, you could say, that this person, whoever it might be, resides with me. He has a lot of guns. He's been talking crazy things, or I'm afraid that he might be planning something. And then the authorities can come out under these red flag laws and confiscate those guns from that individual that's been accused of possible future, you know, action, or, you know what I mean, shootings. Not for sure do we know that's going to happen, but when we're talking about things like this today, the same thing happened in another country a while back, and that was the Enabling Act in Europe. And Hitler is now pretty well accepted that the Reichstag was the parliament in Berlin. And all of a sudden it catches on fire and burns down, you know, total loss, you know. And in fact, when I was over in West Berlin, it was still in ruins, but it's just inside of East Berlin in the wall, just east of the wall. But what happened in that particular case is that Hitler used that fire to eventually enact a law that they called the Enabling Act. And the Enabling Act provided the power and the authority for the government to go in and start searching homes for weapons and without any kind of warrants or anything else. And that was called the Enabling Act. Now, when they put this through Parliament, the Nazis, I think, had about a 35% membership in Parliament. And they needed help to get this passed. So they called upon the Central Party, which was the party of the church, of the Catholic Church. And together, the Central Party, along with the Nazis party, passed the Enabling Act, which then gave rise to later on Hitler being appointed as Chancellor of Germany. And using the Enabling Act, he took over, and by edict, he started ruling and taking Germany into a tyranny and a dictatorship. So these laws can be used by very, very evil people to run roughshod over our freedoms. So these red flag laws and these other flags these other so-called gun control laws must be very, very carefully considered, because it's just one step in the direction of taking and confiscating. Then I think on these red flag laws, there's something about a database of arms that has to be created, possibly, to conform if it was a federal law. See, they're considering it on a federal basis, and we have states that have these red flag laws already. So, but if they do it on a federal basis, then they would say, uh-oh, we have to link this to a database of people that have arms, see, to prove whatever, to, you know. And so it gets into a different, a morass of tightening the controls over people, over honest people that have guns for their own protection. The Second Amendment was never about hunting, and these liberals out there always get back and say, well, that's about hunting, and you can have your hunting rifles. It's not about hunting. It's about protecting yourself against a very repressive, tyrannical government that wants to come and take your guns and put you in a slave state. That's what the Second Amendment is truly about. It's not about hunting. It's far from that. It's protecting individual people's freedom and liberties. And that's really what we're talking about. That's why these signs of this ominous change, this transformation of America from a republic into something that resembles a pure democracy, which would be a tyranny of the majority that Tocqueville came over from France to study America and write extensively about it for his French audience. Well, he coined the term tyranny of the majority, meaning when you have a pure democracy, the majority rules, and so they can override anyone's freedom and liberty, individual freedoms and rights. And so that's really what we're up against on this. We've got to be very, very careful in navigating our way through a possible red flag morass of taking the guns forever. And I'm against the red flag for that reason. And so I stand firmly on gun rights and the ability to keep and bear arms. And so that's what I'm all about. But I want to thank everyone out there for listening. We've had this third hour we put up. Tony Gosling comes in from England, from Bristol. He has a lot of knowledge about a lot of different things. We don't always agree on different things, Tony and I don't. He's more from the left, collective left, labor left in England, and I'm from the Republic right here, you could say, in America. But I do respect the man. He's done a tremendous service in his community there in Bristol over the years, and he's broadcast on BBC too and done some production there. Well, I want to thank everyone for listening. Yeah, thank you for listening out there again. And we've got to maintain our individual freedoms and liberties and rights. Without that, and actually the right to keep and bear arms helps protect those things. It's not a danger. People that are lawful citizens and law-abiding citizens should have the right to have what they want and to protect their families. And we've got all these other kinds of groups that are coming up out there that are being formed, and they're causing riots and their violence is more prone. And it reminds me of when pre-Nazi Germany, there were a lot of groups out there that were knocking heads. And I'm beginning to see that this country has these very brutistic, full of brutes. And they're hitting each other, and they're very dangerous to one another. And what we've got to do is we've got to be very, very careful about continuing to allow this kind of disorder in this country. And these mayors up there, like in Portland, they better take note and be careful about the groups that they're allowing to promulgate violence. Well, thank you very much, and God bless each and every one of you. Good night.